Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Narayanam Namaskritya. Naram Chaiva Narotamam. Devim Saraswatim Vyasam. Tito Jayam Udirayet. Nasta Prayeshu Abhadreshu. Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya. Bhagavati Uttama Shloke. Bhaktir Bhavati Naishtiki. Reading this morning from the 8th canto, Srimad Bhagavatam, chapter 18, text 2. I would like to thank Swavas Prabhu for your kind hospitality and all of you for allowing me to speak this morning. It's wonderful to be here. So these are the pastimes of Lord Vamandev. Shyama Vadato Chasaraja Kundala Twisola Sach Tri Vadanambuja Puman Srivatsa Bhaksha Balayanga Dolasad Krita Kanchi Guna Charu Nupuraha Shyama Vadato Chasa Raja Kundala Twisola Sach Tri Vadanambuja Puman Srivatsa Bhaksha Balayanga Dolasat Kirita Kanchi Gunacharu Nupara Shyama Vadato Jhasa Raja Kundala Twisola Sach Tri Vadanambuja Puman Srivatsa Bhaksha Balayanga Lolasad Kirita Kanchi Gunacharu Nupara Gunacharu Nupara. Please chant. Gundalam Shyama Vadato Jhasa Raja Kundala. Mitola Pasati Mudam. Yeah. Vasat. Vaishnavis. Shama Vadato Chatadhyaya Kundala. Tviso Lasachtri Vadanam Buja Puman. Sri Vatsa Langa Vadantasa. Svaya Vadato Chasaraja Kundala. Synonyms. We can just read these together. Shama Avadata, whose body is blackish and free from inebrieties. Chasa Raja Kundala, of the two earrings made in the shape of sharks. Trisha, by the luster. Ulasat, dazzling. Srivadana Ambuja, having a beautiful lotus face. Puman, the Supreme Person. Srivatsavaksha, with the mark of Srivatsa on his bosom. Balaya, bracelets. Angada, armbands. Ulasat, dazzling. Kirita, helmet. Kanchi, belt. Guna, sacred thread. Charu, beautiful. Nuparaha, ankle bells. Translation. The body of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, blackish in complexion, was free from all inebrieties. His lotus face, decorated with earrings resembling sharks, appeared very beautiful, and on his bosom was the mark of Sri Vatsa. He wore bangles on his wrists, armlets on his arms, a helmet on his head, a belt on his waist, a sacred thread across his chest, and ankle bells decorating his lotus feet. This description goes on for several verses without purport, so I'd like to just read the translation for the next few verses, if we may. Text 3. An uncommonly beautiful garland of flowers decorated his bosom, and because the flowers were extremely fragrant, a large group of bees, making their natural humming sounds, invaded them for honey. When the Lord appeared, wearing the Kaushtubha gem on his neck, his effulgence vanquished the darkness in the home of Prajapati Kashyapa. Text 4. At that time, there was happiness in all directions, in the reservoirs of water, like the rivers and oceans, and in the core of everyone's heart. The various seasons displayed their respective qualities, and all living entities in the upper planetary system, in outer space, and on the surface of the earth were jubilant. The demigods, the cows, the Brahmins, and the hills and mountains were all filled with joy. And text 5. On the day of Shravana Dwadasi, the 12th day of the bright fortnight in the month of Bhadra, when the moon came into the lunar mansion Shravana, at the auspicious moment of Abhijit, the Lord appeared in this universe. Considering the Lord's appearance, very auspicious, All the stars and planets, from the sun to Saturn, were munificently charitable. Purport. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, an expert astrologer, explains the word nakshatra taradhya. The word nakshatra means the stars. The word tara in this context refers to the planets. And adhya means the first one specifically mentioned. Among the planets, the first is Surya, the sun, not the moon. Therefore, according to the Vedic version, the modern astronomers' proposition that the moon is nearest to the earth should not be accepted. The chronological order, in which people all over the world refer to the days of the week, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, corresponds to the Vedic order of the planets, and thus circumstantiates the Vedic version. Apart from this, when the Lord appeared, the planets and stars became situated very auspiciously, according to astrological calculations, to celebrate the birth of the Lord. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. I wonder if Srila Prabhupada wrote this purport when he was here in Los Angeles. He gave a very similar talk on Venice Beach one day. So today is the Disappearance Day celebration of Ram Dass Prabhu. I'd like to mention a few things about him later in the class. But for the moment, this topic about the astronomical situation of the solar system is a touchy point. When the fifth canto came out, and in which these topics were described in detail, a lot of devotees lost their faith in Krishna consciousness, which really showed the faith, how deeply the faith is ingrained in the modern astrological or astronomical calculations. In fact, of the appearance of Lord Vamanadeva, which is very much how the whole world was affected, all the ordinary progressions of nature were suspended, and all of the seasons displayed their opulence at the same time. You know, you never would see such a thing. So this defies our ordinary sense of reality so much that for many people it's too much of a stretch. But what we learn in Krishna consciousness is how to discriminate with intelligence, you know, and these statements are all our sensual experience, but we accept them because we have signed over our intelligence to certain people who we trust, right? And therefore we accept what they say without question. So to be Krishna conscious just means to re-exercise that power of discrimination and redirect our trust, find out firsthand by our experience how things are structured in this universe. If anyone in NASA, you know, anyone signed up for a space exploration, we're just not going to know. So how do we discriminate? Whose authority do we take? So because of the things we can experience, we can realistically or reasonably place our faith in the Vedic authorities. And what sort of things can we experience? The most simple and profound thing is that sense gratification does not make us happy. We have tried and tried and it hasn't worked, and still we keep trying. But it just doesn't do the job. It doesn't satisfy the heart. We are always hankering for something more. So the Vedic proposition that pleasing Krishna will make us happy if we're at least open-minded enough to experiment with it has such a powerful effect that it is easy then to take on faith further statements that we cannot verify with our senses. This is reasonable faith. And although people will deride us or criticize us for being narrow-minded, we just have a different epistemology. We just have a different source of knowledge. Now, in this case, with the particular issue of the order of the planets, issue of the order of the planets, logic sounds very simplistic. Robot's logic is a materialist. But the fact is that Prabhupada speaking from a high higher paths of progress. There are ways to measure. So suppose you are in New York City, and there's skyscrapers around you, and you're looking for two people. So your GPS says that one person is just a block away and the other person is two blocks away. So you would naturally think that the person who's a block away is closer to you. But if the person who's two blocks away is on ground level and the person who's one block away is 100 stories up, he's actually, who are you closer to? You see? So in the same way, the moon is further away from the Earth, although it appears to be closer. It is more of a heavenly planet, or more of an elevated planet than is the sun. So in this way, there's multiple dimensions. Now, this really sounded wacko back in the 70s when it came out, but today, with quantum mechanics, there are now theories that there's multiple universes and multiple levels of reality that are being discussed in the highest level of scientific research. It's just like Yogeshwar Prabhu's brother. His name's Stephen Green? Brian Green? Brian Green, I believe. Anyway, he's a very, very big name in physics. He's not necessarily the best scholar, but he's the best spokesman for modern physics. He's had specials on PBS. He's like a spokesman to communicate to the common man these esoteric ideas of physics. But when he speaks, sometimes he'll say, yeah, I'll talk to my brother, the Hare Krishna, about quantum mechanics. He said, oh yeah, we knew about that years ago in the Vedas. So these are different levels of reality, all of which are beyond our perception. But we take our inspiration, we put our faith in those who haven't really cheated us, those who have actually not come to us with a mood of exploiting, but with a mood of helping. And they have helped us, and therefore we trust them. That's all, a simple thing. So this in the writings of the Goswamis is called nishta, or firm faith, unshakable faith, as opposed to the preliminary faith in God, that God may exist. It's called shraddha, the theoretical, okay, preliminary, beginning faith. So that journey from preliminary faith to fixed faith is not based on how fanatic you can be or how much you can pretend to believe in something. It's based on experience. A Dao Shraddha, so from a little preliminary faith, we get the blessings of what? Sadhu Sangha, we get to hang out with the devotees. And then in the association of devotees, by their association, we begin Bhajana Kriya, we start practicing Krishna consciousness. So, from that practice, a miraculous thing happens. It doesn't happen in college. It doesn't happen in the military. It doesn't happen in business. It only happens in Krishna consciousness. And what is that? Yeah, anartha nivritti. Not only giving them up, but having them just kind of atrophy and die miraculously. Whoa, that is a wonderful, unique experience that only devotees enjoy. And that is powerful enough to lead to nishta. Then we have firm faith that even if I don't know everything, I have faith that Prabhupada is not cheating me, that the devotees are not cheating me, that this Bhagavatam is not phantasmagoria. So therefore we can reasonably have faith. And then the door is open to the higher levels of devotional experience. So that's enough about that. Any comments on this subject? All right. So yes, Satchitananda.
How would you respond to a I'm concerned. Mm. My experience with the new followers, they have history. Mm. There's a history, you know, like any other religious group or any other organization is going through. So I would like to see something that actually it's, how do you say, like pervades the purity, the wisdom, the knowledge, and the practical application. What would you answer to that?
Well, the Rabindra Sarup Prabhu put it nicely. He said, when you first come to Krishna consciousness, you have a lot of awe and reverence for the devotees. And then you get to know them. So then you see that these are also human beings. These are also spirit souls and human bodies with all the attachments. So the real issue is, where are we going internally in Krishna consciousness? Okay? And if our Krishna consciousness is dependent on what other people do, it's not very far, is it? Look at Srila Prabhupada. I mean, if he said, oh, I can't leave India, I can't leave the association of devotees. Got to have the association of devotees. Otherwise, how can I be? You know. Or if he had said, well, all of my god brothers, they didn't carry out the order of my guru, therefore I can't practice. If they can't do it, I can't do it. They had faults, so therefore this whole process might not work, you see. Actual Krishna consciousness is self-contained between us and Krishna, and the spiritual master as the via medium. So when we experience Krishna consciousness internally, it doesn't matter what anyone else does, does it? They may like it or not like it. They may uphold high standards, they may fall down, you know. That's out of our control. We get strength from being with strong devotees, like geese flying in formation. They go in a V. You know, they get strength being together and heading in the same direction. But if one of them goes down, there's nothing anyone can do, right? So this is the expression of a neophyte devotee. Because the devotee said, therefore I can't be Krishna conscious. And all that means is that one has not achieved nishta as of yet. So that whatever is done is good. Nehabi krama naso sti prativaya navidyate. There's no loss or diminution. But the unfortunate thing is they have empowered others to determine their spiritual advancement. If you're doing well, then I'll do well. If you're not doing well, then I'm quitting. See? And it does happen. So, okay. Other comments? Yes, Prabhu.
Hare Krishna, Prabhu. Thank you for your wonderful class. So, in the purport, Prabhupada mentioned 9 planets. Oh, sorry, 7. Mm. Oh, no, some planets. What is the role that the other planets, because there are so many planets, but why in the Vedic astrology only emphasize these 7 planets? So the other planets do not affect us?
Yeah, I'm not an astrologer, so you better ask somebody more knowledgeable. Vijay Prabhu, you're leaving? All glories to Prabhupada. Nice to see you, Prabhu. Vijay Prabhu ki jai. Yes, those planets, other than the prominent ones in our souls, I guess there are some considerations, but I don't know. One thing that strikes me, though, is that how specifically the time of Lord Vamana's appearance is described, and likewise as is Krishna's appearance. So people discount the Vedic literature. In fact, the Srimad Bhagavatam is said to be written like 1,500 years ago, and this is pretty much the standard scholarly point of view. Why? Because it predicts the appearance of Lord Buddha, for one thing. And it predicts it so accurately that scholars say, well, then it must have been written afterwards. See, I'm just skeptical. So, in fact, the Kurukshetra War is another example. Sataputra Prabhu did some research and uncovered certain references to the astrology at the time of the battle that dated 5,000 years ago. So the evidence is there. These times can be calculated, but people are only dependent upon their sensual perception for their knowledge, anuman. So, as a result, people have no faith. So as far as the influence of the planets, yes, definitely these immediate planets have the most influence, I understand, astrologically. But, you know, these things are like a virus. I mean, how many viruses are you going to get in your lifetime? So if you're in a bad Rahu period or a debilitated Saturn period or whatever, okay, so you're going to be materially inconvenienced somewhat. But it's so insignificant compared to the steady happiness of Krishna consciousness. We just deal with Krishna, like Prabhupada said about palm reading, right? If you still have lines on the palms, you haven't clapped enough in kirtan. All right. Any other comments on this part? Yes, sir.
So just to be clear, in the fifth canto, and in your estimation, the sun is closer than the moon.
Again, we're talking about various planes. Okay, so in terms of its elevation, the sun is closer to the Earth's level than is the moon. The moon is a higher plane. Not in terms of its miles. Do you understand the
thank
difference?
Thank you, Prabhu.
You understand the difference?
I do understand, yes.
Okay. Okay. Okay, Prabhuji.
Hare Krishna. I'm just wondering about Nishtha. You were explaining about Nishtha. But gradually we give up bad habits, and when we come to Nishtha, and if we have a new defined Nishtha, if we have faith in devotional service, even maybe we don't know a lot of knowledge about that. Is it like gradual achievement, or at some point when you have this really strong faith, you become Nishtha?
Is Nishtha a gradual achievement? It is. But what it means is that you would not leave Krishna consciousness under any circumstances. You no longer have any investment in this material world. There's no longer anything that says, oh, I'd actually be happier doing this or doing that than I would be practicing Krishna consciousness. That's Nishtha. And it's not driven by anything intellectual or mental. It's driven by experience. The life I have in Krishna consciousness is so much nicer than the life I had before. And specifically, we could say the life I have practicing sadhana bhakti, following the four regular principles, chanting 16 rounds. The life I have with that is so much better than anything else I've experienced that why should I leave?
What about mixed devotional service when it's mixed with some sense gratification and mental speculation?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, it takes time. Everything's driven by taste, ananda maya vyasa. You know, it's not driven by fear. Like the religion I was raised in was driven by fear. If you don't follow, you go to hell. I really like Krishna consciousness because we can just say it straight out. Los Angeles is hell. You know, don't worry about going to hell. We're already living there. You know, just go out on the 405 any time, day or night. You'll experience it. So, no, we're already in a hellish condition. And that clarifies everything. So there's no threat. Everything's driven by love. Everything's driven by positive enjoyment. And that is how we transcend terrible bodily pains and inconveniences, because we're driven by a higher taste. We're pursuing something much greater. So this is a good segue to Ram Dass Prabhu. Right? Ram Dass Prabhu was absolutely debilitated by a terrible disease, and it only increased his Krishna consciousness. Actually, there are many devotees who have had this experience, and if no other reason to stay in Krishna consciousness is just so that you can die well. You know, I like to tell the students that we Hare Krishnas, we're good at two things, cooking and dying. Not necessarily connected. But it's a fact. Nobody dies, nobody leaves this world as well as devotees do, because we see, that's Nishtha. Okay? When I have nothing in this world that I want. You know, I'm my bags are packed. I want to get out of here to a better situation. And I know I have to pay the dues of this bodily suffering, but it's well worth it to go to Krishna conscious destination. So, Ram Dass Prabhu was a mendicant, a homeless man, who had come to Los Angeles in 1980. And at that time I was doing the Bhakti program under the direction of Dhanavir Maharaj, then Dhanavir Das Brahmachari. And he was not here, but he had trained me in some very important principles. May I just share those with you? Because they're very instrumental to Ram Dass's story. First of all, he said to allow people to be Krishna conscious, we have to be able to see past the bodily designations and be open-minded to anybody. And he really, really pushed this point. So sometimes he would bring in these people who, you know, where the room would just reek with their socks. You know? Yeah, but he said, no, come on in. Here's your place in the ashram. You can try it out for 3 days. I was stunned. But he had experience that sometimes these people would become really nice devotees. And so that was one thing, to see without discrimination. So when Ram Dass came in my office that day, there was this big guy. Clearly he was not well off economically. He was 40, which at that time seemed like about 120 does now. And, you know, clearly older than almost anyone else in the temple. And he was very humble, and he was inquisitive. Another principle Dhanavir Maharaj had really stressed was the new devotees, in order to progress from Shraddha to Nishtha, they need one thing every day in their diet, or at least as often as possible. You know what that is? What? Harinam. Harinam. They got to go on Harinam. So he had that Harinam 5 days a week. And there weren't always such great places to go, but sometimes he'd go downtown and over into the poor areas where the homeless people. That's where Ram Dass saw the devotees. We had a devotee named Krishna Bhajan, I believe. Pardon? Yeah, Krishna Bhajan. Remember, he used to lead the Harinam every day. He was a rock and so blissful. So he would go and chant down in the down and out areas of L.A. sometimes. And so that's where Ram Dass saw devotees. He got a card and he walked 10 miles to come to the temple. And we sat down in my office and he was interested. So I said, well, how'd you like to try it out for 3 days, which was our program? And tears came to his eyes. He just started crying. I didn't quite know what to make of it. I was not sure. Is he thinking, okay, great, this is going to be an easy score for me? Or he was just touched that we were... He knew nothing about Krishna consciousness, and that was the point. He was just sincere. And then when he moved in the ashram, although he was older, although he was coming from a totally different place than the other students who were there, he was just so sincere and humble. He was like, from day one, just a rock. You know, always get up, very enthusiastic, very nice attitude, very cooperative. And this was all really new to him. When you're 20, it's one thing. But when you're 40, it's another thing. You have to be really ready to say, I'm done with the way I have seen the world and lived my life. And he was like that. So he was truly a very, very extraordinary person in that regard. So I only knew Ram Dass in the Adi Leela period, you know. I think most devotees knew him in his Madhya and Antya Leelas. And I just wasn't with him during those times. I can't say much about that. But he took all the responsibilities that he could take in the Bhakta ashram. And then when I came back to L.A. to visit a few years later and he was the head pujari, on the one hand it was surprising, on the other hand it was completely understandable. The most responsible position in the community, somebody you could really trust. So he was given that position just because he was, first of all, older than all the other pujaris, so they might listen to him a little, and that he was so good at getting along with people. This is the other hallmark of Nishta, and it's also related to your question, Satchin Anoy Prabhu. You know, why? How is it we can get to a point in our spiritual life where we don't find fault in others? Remember? Trinadapi sunichena torori vasahishnuna. Amanina manadena. I don't want any respect for myself, but I'm ready to give all the respect in the world to everyone else. That was Ramdas. He just naturally had that attitude of respect for everybody. So therefore he was able to progress so quickly. But then a few years later, when he had when his body just broke down on him, he just went to Vrindavan and lived for years when he was supposed to have been dead. out of his great attachment and taste for Krishna consciousness. So that's the point. If we can put our trust in the Vedic literature, and then we can treat the devotees respectfully, so that we don't undo our advancement by making offenses, then there's no limit to how deeply we can go into Krishna consciousness. And even a person with no material qualification or preparation can immediately step to a very high level of devotional service. So, anyone else like to share anything about Ramdas from his later pastimes with Vas Prabhu?
Well, I think that you made a very pertinent point that he was very sincere. So there's no question about it. I think everybody liked him because of that quality in him. And he's very humble also. I think you know, those are attributes that are very important, especially living in an ashram and a community, because it develops trust and faith in each other. And Ram Dass was able to get that out of people. You know, he was qualified to do that. It wasn't artificial. It was genuine. That was his character. And I think that when you first meet him, I think most of us went through the same thing you did. When you first meet him, you're not quite sure how to take it. Is it for real, or is it, you know, it took a little time to get accustomed to it. And then after a while, you kind of find out that, yes, he really was that way. He was actually very compassionate. Mm-hmm. And always tried to help a lot of devotees. And he was so compassionate, it got him in trouble a lot of times. You know, just doing more than he should be doing. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Which had affected sometimes his Krishna consciousness even. Mm. You know, so I think that's... It kind of goes to show you his character, though, because if it came to that point and you spoke to him about it, he realized it. In other words, he was humble enough to... Yeah, you're right. I've got to do something different here. Mm. So that, and I only know that because I was a temple president here, so we had to have conversations periodically. Mm-hmm. And I found that from him, if you just explain it logically, because of his humbleness, he accepted it and he would actually, you know, stop or whatever, do something different in order to be able to go on, mm-hmm. you know, and do his service. And yes, he did. At one particular point, he was so, like, weak from the service that he did have to kind of, like, retire. Mm. You know, we encouraged him to retire, so he did. But it didn't take him long to really feel the effects of that illness. Mm. And when that happened, then he came back to New Dwarka, and we gave him an apartment across the street. Mm. And there we weren't quite sure how it was going to progress. And the doctor said he had so much time to live, which is true. In fact, he was so weak here in L.A., he couldn't even get on an airplane. So when he was able to finally get on an airplane, we bought him a ticket to India, one-way ticket. And when he was there, he still lived for a few years. So it was kind of amazing. And when we went there, I went there to visit him a couple of times. He insisted on cooking like lunch for you. Yeah. And it was the same old Ram Dass, you know, a lot of curd and a few vegetables. So, you know, it was enjoyable. It was, when you got done eating a meal with him, you had a few good laughs. You know, it was very joyful, very, very happy, and good memories.
Archito Prabhu, would you like to?
Oh, thank you for a nice class. I think maybe I won't take your time now. Later on, we'll talk a little bit about this business of the stinky socks and everything, but because there's a line there that you have to know, you know, when to ask them to move on and when to give them the chance. Right. But I just wanted to say a few things about Ram Dass, just to substantiate what Siva said. My last encounter with him was in Vrindavan also. And even though everybody was going there to visit him, to, you know, to wish him well and see how he was doing, he would always turn it around and he would be more interested in you. What are you up to and how are you doing? And after a few minutes, you completely forgot about him and you were willing to talk about yourself. You know? He's like that. He's just had that knack of just turning it around. You know, don't worry about me and what's going on with you. And his compassion wasn't just on the bodily level. You know, because we're all mistrained to think that if somebody cares about my body, then they care about me. So yes, he had that side of it. He knew a little bit about Chinese herbs and stuff like that. If something was wrong with you, he would tell you what to take and that kind of stuff. But he was more interested about your spiritual advancement. So that's what I picked up from him back when he was still here and healthy. That he was concerned about all the devotees, but more on the spiritual platform, not just that your body's healthy. Mm-hmm. He really wanted to see that everybody was making nice progress happily in Krishna consciousness. So the last time I saw him in Vrindavan, he did the same thing. He cooked lunch. A whole bunch of us from LA came at the same time. About half a dozen of us just dropped in on him on the same day. And within a few minutes, he had lunch ready for everybody. And I don't remember the subject so much, but I do remember he made some mean chapatis. Really good chapatis. And you could have as many as you wanted, and which was unusual at that time even. In the early days, we used to make a lot of chapatis, but after a while, that kind of went away. But then you would go to visit Ram Dass, who was ill in Vrindavan, and he had a stack of chapatis. Everybody could have as many as they wanted. So that's what I remember. Anybody else?
Sarah Prabhu.
I remember Ram Dass, with Savas Prabhu's permission, opened the Maha Room here. And first it was in a room that no one even knows was a room. It's between the temple and the museum. It's a bathroom. But it was a room at that point that had a few paintings in it. And he distributed Maha at noon, 1 o'clock, and it became so popular. This was in, what year was that? 90, maybe 90, 91. It was so popular that he moved to the, he would personally be there all the time distributing the prasadam, Maha Prasadam. They moved to the front of the Peach Building, and he kept it going until Savas opened the new restaurant, which had to take precedent. But he had such a following from the yoga community, even in 90. I remember Dirk from Yoga Mandir used to come and bring his students, and Ram Dass would preach to them. And I specifically remember, I think I told this before, that even though Ram Dass was a younger devotee than us, he joined in mid-80s, late 80s?
No, 1980.
80. So he was a little bit younger devotee than the Prabhupada disciples. Still, because of his age, I think he was, like you say, at least 15 years older than us. Mm-hmm. We would look at him as senior. Mm. And besides Svavas Prabhu, who was giving instructions to devotees, many, many, many devotees would go for consultation to Ram Dass. I remember myself, I didn't want to talk to anybody. My wife had, the mother of my children, had just left, 1992. But not only she left me with my two children. So I was a devotee with a 5-year-old and a 3-year-old. Mm. And I was very bewildered to be a mother and a father and take care of these little monsters. And Ram Dass, I didn't approach him. Savas said a few things. If you need any help, we have this, we have that. You can send him to the nursery. And it was very helpful. But Ram Dass came. He came to my office and he said, "What's going on?" And I was like, "You know, it's very difficult." He reached in. He always used to carry this bag on his shoulder a cloth bag. And he used to keep, I don't know, 5 to 10 humongous samosas. Isn't it? He pulled out this humongous big samosa. I think it was Maha, special Maha. And he said, here, eat this and start talking. I had no idea when you say he came from the streets of L.A. I mean, I've heard that before, but when I knew him in those years, my idea was this is some high personality that was probably a preacher in Atlanta or, you know, owned a church. Mm-hmm. That's what I thought of Ram Dass. Mm-hmm. And he spoke with me at length about the situation and what I should do. And I was very amazed that his response and his consultation was highly, highly Krishna conscious and actually helped me immensely in raising the two little monsters.
Did he advise you to change your nomenclature, the way you address them? Or
the way I what?
The way you address the kids.
No, he just said, you can do this. You can be mother and father. Wow. And just, you know, keep doing what you're doing, but be Krishna conscious and bring them, get them super involved in the temple. You know, he was extremely encouraging. And at that time, I was, in my brain, very confused.
It's so, like the moon and the sun, isn't it? I mean, in a linear sense, he was a junior devotee, but in a higher sense, he was elevated. So, thank you very much. Anything else? All right. Satchitananda Prabhu.
Thank you, Kalakanta Prabhu. It's nice to see you here. And I just want to mention a couple of words. That I'm very happy to see you here. You're a contributor of my Krishna consciousness as my Bhakta leader, and along with Dhanavir Prabhu. And as far as new Bhaktas, so people coming here, I remember that permeated the atmosphere of eagerness to please Prabhupada, and that you can't help it. If you come and you see all the devotees very, very much selflessly doing something for pleasing Prabhupada and Krishna, you just have to join. And Ram Dass came a little bit after I came, but I could see that he also, we already spoke that he's humble, he was humble. But that contributed to about the care, concern, and specifically you, my memory of you is like very kind, care and culture, and that captured me. So if I am in a place where the person is very cultured, educated, and has concern, I'm going to be here. So now, Ram Dass Prabhu, after that, I had the opportunity to be associated with him, and he did many different services. For example, at that time we were fundraising, and he will do anything you will ask him. He will carry those big boxes of candles we wore in Christmas everywhere. Then he will do a records. Then we went door to door also, distributing magazines. We opened up a center in Fullerton. There was nothing happening there. And he was like our father, like our mother. He will cook for all the Sankirtan devotees, very lovingly, very personal. So I have a lot of good memories of Ram Dass Prabhu. And I'm very happy to see that he's been a special days served to glorify him. So, Ram Dass Prabhu ki.
Yeah. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Shri Rukmini Dwarkadish ki jai.
I have one more question.